And Marte dumps one into center field. Base hit. Here comes Alonso. Stevenson's thrown to the plate. Too late, and the Mets have won it. Seven straight for New York. Marte the hero. A broken bat dunker into center field. Enough to win it. The Mets rally for two in the bottom of the 10th. They finish off a 7-0 homestand as they sweep the Phillies.
Is there significance to opening up some distance between you and one of your division rivals?
It's always good to win games, to win series, especially when you're playing against teams within your division. But understanding it's only April, and we're going to see those guys a lot more, and they're a good team. You know, we just happen to be playing really well. But I said it last night, it's going to be a fun summer. You know, the Braves are good. They're good. Like, there's a lot of good team overall around the league. So, but we know we're good. We just got to continue to take care of business and continue to control the things that we need to control.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Wednesday, April the 23rd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Joining me for this midweek edition of the Talking Mets podcast, our good friend from North Jersey, The Record Sports, Andrew Tredenick, Syracuse alum, covers the Mets, Mets beat reporter. Andrew, welcome to the program. And I thought about bringing you on. And when we talked about this, I was like, well, we'll see how this Mets-Philly series goes. You were out of the ballpark. You've been covering the team. I guess I'll start with that anecdotal, non-statistical way of looking at things. Good vibes out at Citi Field. Another great crowd for a weekday. The fans have been great. A total 180 from last year. And there's a lot of good stuff going on and sustainable stuff with the Mets. But there's one thing that you can't explain, and it's not on Baseball Reference, and it's the vibe. So you're in that locker room. Talk a little bit about that. It's a fun thing, at least here early on, to see.
Yeah, I think you look at, you know, what this week was, obviously with the series with the Phillies, you go in thinking, you know, maybe take two out of three, and, you know, they win all three games. Pete Alonso, after today's game, you know, they complete an undefeated homestand. He said 7-0, you can't get any better than that. So, a lot of good things that came out of this this homestand, this series against the Phils, whether it was starting pitching. It's been kind of their calling card, starting pitching, bullpen, and then the lifts that you got. You know, Francisco Lindor had a great series. Obviously, Starling Marte came through today. You know, some big plays from role players. You know, Hayden Sanger, guy that, you know, wasn't on the team entering spring training, and now he's coming through with that big defensive play, the tag on Nick Castellanos. Up and down, Max Kranick, another guy that was competing for a job coming in. What a revelation he's been for this bullpen. So, you know, it's the 26 men. I think Carlos Mendoza mentioned it after today's game. It's coming from all areas, and Juan Soto hasn't really even hit his stride yet. But the contributions are up and down the lineup, all throughout the pitching staff. Best record in baseball, and you know, a three-game sweep over your rivals, you have to feel pretty good heading into a weekend series with the Nationals here.
And five-game lead, and I know it's a long way to October, but you never could complain. I always say that first benchmark is 10 games over 500. You don't expect to get that before May 1st, and five-game lead again really early. Not a bad start. If it was it's a marathon. If you get a five-pace lead early, no one's going to take that and throw that back.
Yeah, for sure. And the Mets weren't 10 games over 500 until early September last year. They're obviously the slow start that they had last year, 0-5, they were kind of constantly, digging out from under that hole, didn't play well in May, but obviously now they're the pace setters. So, like what you see from them here in April, obviously Lindor, I think we touched on it, coming into the season, has slumped in traditionally slumped in April. He's off to a strong start, and Pete Alonso playing at an MVP caliber, MVP caliber offense here, doing it with his glove as well. You have to feel really good about that top of the lineup with Juan Soto not yet, being the Juan Soto that we all expect. But 10 games now, 11 games over 500, have to feel really good considering what last year was, how they were kind of playing catch up what seemed like all year long. So.
Well, you mentioned the starting pitching, and I think we could start there. And I know it wasn't a North Jersey piece, but Ryan Stanek was talking to Newsday, and this is high praise. He talked about the Mets pitching development, the Mets pitching department. He said it's as good as anywhere he's been. Now, this is a guy that's played for Tampa. This is a guy that's played for Houston. Houston notoriously was known for bringing guys over. Even Gerrit Cole, who was a good pitcher before the Astros, Justin Verlander, a good pitcher before the Astros, they revitalized their careers there. Constant relievers going in and out. Tampa Bay's always bringing in no-name relievers and somehow maximizing those efforts. And not only are you seeing this with the bullpen here, something that's been forever an issue with the starting pitching. Griffin Canning, a perfect example. A guy that's a, I mean, so many scrappy pickups. No Manaea, no Montas. And, this is high praise. What insights do you have being around the club?
Yeah, I think pretty much every pitcher you talk to, it seems like, they're praising the development. I spoke with Reed Garrett earlier in the season, just kind of what they've done to his repertoire, adding extra pitches, with him, that splitter was something he learned in Japan, but coming over and kind of building around that. Obviously Griffin Canning, he's a testament kind of what they're doing, kind of how he's on the mound, being able to make adjustments on the fly. You hear it all throughout this pitching staff, just the confidence that Jeremy Hefner gives these guys to go out. A case of Tyler McGill was a guy that kind of expanded his repertoire, and now they're kind of dialing it back a little bit, pitching to his strengths. I think there's, they take these guys, and it's whether it's adding pitches, fine-tuning the arsenal. You see it in a variety of different ways. The starters morphing into bullpen arms and really showcasing their strengths. Whether it's Max Kranich, Jose Buttow, some of those guys. I think a lot of this start is a testament to Jeremy Hefner and the pitching development staff, what they've been able to do with a lot of different guys, starters, relievers, guys that are making that transition from starter to reliever as well.
And it looks sustainable. I mean, I know it's early. I know they've played a little bit in the cold, and maybe the Phillies were one of the better offenses they faced. Of course, they faced Houston. They faced Toronto. But when you look at it, other than maybe the starting pitching and some of the walks, mainly Holmes and Canning, they've been pretty good. And it's funny, Kodai Senga, who's known to be the strikeout guy, he's striking out less hitters than everybody else. And to me, that's not a bad thing because he's pitching to what his repertoire is asking. What the you know maybe have you know being a little more aggressive, not falling behind like he did even when he was very good in 2023. It was plenty of 3-2 counts and laborious outings and things like that. So again, it's early. I don't want to overstate this because they're going to have stinkers. I mean, they're not going to pitch to below 3 ERA. I mean, you're talking about late 80s Mets, 88 Mets type of pitching, pre all the, things that are going on offensively. But who knows? Maybe, maybe there's a little bit of back to future where it's going to become more of a pitching and defense league to a certain degree, even without, the sticky stuff and everything.
For sure. And I think maybe one thing you would like to see from the starting staff is maybe just to get a little bit deeper into games. Obviously David Peterson had, five, and it seems like they're all getting to 5 innings, but beyond that,
Third time around the order.
exactly. And it was a case today where, Mendoza was kind of strapped. Obviously it's the end of a lot of games in a row, and he was kind of had to roll with some relievers that he really didn't intend on using, you know, with like Max Kranich there in the 10th inning with Diaz with the hip, and we'll see what kind of comes of that. I think you want to take a little bit less of a strain on that bullpen, maybe get a little bit into the sixth, seventh inning. We've seen it a little bit here. Clay Holmes, Kodai Senga's had some long starts, but I think it always stands to, you know, benefit you if you're able to get a little bit deeper and kind of take some of the strain off the bullpen here, moving forward.
And I don't want to, you know, get too far ahead, but with Manaea and Montas on the horizon in some way, shape, or form, even if it's a month or 6 weeks away, you're probably looking at a six-man rotation. I don't think they'll go but a five. They've talked about that since the spring. Somebody's going to be the odd man out. Do you kind of use them as a piggyback, where, you know, they're out of the bullpen, but maybe they're spotted a little bit? I know that's tough when you're a starter, and I think the one that ultimately, I think when in spring training before the injuries that you and I talked about was Griffin Canning being that guy that, because he's heavily slider, changeup, and I think it was more than 50% of his repertoire right now is slider changeup. That's uncommon for a starting pitcher. I mean, that's more than Dylan Cease or Chris Sale or something like that. So you wonder if that's part of it, but he's pitching so well. It's going to be hard to take any of these guys out of the rotation. You wonder, and maybe you have some insight as to maybe the direction they would go. Good problem to have, and you have to see Manaea and Montas be healthy. You don't want to break up this rotation, but the third time around the order might be, or the lack thereof might be why they're so successful. They're understanding how to maximize exactly what they want out of these pitchers without pushing them too far.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see just how they approach this, and I think it's a case where they're not going to cross that bridge until they really have to at this point.
Sure.
You know, see how these guys pitch over the next, you know, 2, 3 weeks before we see Montas or Manaea come back. And you know, obviously it's been a strong month, but some of these guys are, I'm sure, going to hit some, you know, some speed bumps along the way and maybe make that decision a little bit easier on the front office. So I don't think they're crossing that bridge. I think they're riding this wave while they can, and then kind of see where everything falls, you know, in the next month or so. But you look back to Trevor Williams a few years ago, he was that swing guy, and I think,
Good
you know,
point.
if they can kind of harness a little bit of that, what he was to that team back in 2022, I think they would certainly take it. It's an interesting kind of dichotomy there in the bullpen as it currently is, with, you know, so many guys that were starters and are eating multiple innings. So definitely seem to be approaching it a different way, but we'll see kind of how they, you know, how they translate that moving forward as the top end of that rotation comes back from injury.
At Andrew underscore Tread on X, if you want to follow his great work here at the Record Sports. I know everybody talks about Pete Alonso, and we'll get to him, but I've never seen Francisco Lindor this comfortable in a Mets uniform. I know he got off to a rough start. Obviously, it's easy to look comfortable when you have the homestand that he had. But between, I mean, even, I don't know if you saw it up in the press box, but a couple of days ago, he actually stepped out, let the fans finish the whole My Girl thing and kind of get into it. I mean, they're really lapping it up. And he's, you know, I don't want to say he's, and it's funny because the Knicks are playing and the Knicks are going through their issues, but like almost like the Mets' Jalen Brunson, he's kind of like that whole, everything you've been waiting for to come out. It's almost like, hey, this is home. And I don't know if it's Soto being around and maybe them not being the highest paid player anymore, but you can't say enough about Lindor, other than maybe he could play defense a little bit better, but I'm sure that'll come. But he's been tremendous, and he looks so comfortable in a Mets uniform, the most comfortable I've seen him.
Yeah, I think it goes back to last year and just what he was able to do down the stretch. You know, obviously once he moved into that leadoff position there in mid-May, playing MVP caliber offense, you know, what he brought to the park. And I think just comfortable in the locker room. There's a lot of guys that are, you know, have been there for a number of years. You know, obviously he's kind of grown it into himself a little bit. I know he's talked to me in the past about just, you know, growing up and being, you know, now he's a father of three, and sometimes you just have to mature a little bit. You know, obviously with what transpired when he first got with the team, he's just grown into his own skin. I think he's a guy that thrives on positivity. He walks in the clubhouse every day with a smile on his face, says hi to everybody, all the media members and stuff like that. I think he's just really comfortable with where he is, both in the clubhouse, with the team, viewed as a leader, kind of a mentor, for guys like Mark Vientos that are getting their first regular reps. Just the comfortability, I think that's the biggest thing for him. And, positive vibes, the fans have embraced him now. He's got that vibe with the My Girl song. So I think everything's trending up for Francisco Lindor here. And we'll see where he can take this, because right now it's really special to kind of watch, what he's putting forward on a day-to-day basis.
If when Lindor's ball went over the wall in Atlanta, it kind of lifted this franchise, I've been saying, and maybe to a certain degree for Pete Alonso, who was in the abyss a little bit when the ball went over the wall in Milwaukee, that helped him. But I think what really gave him the kick in the you know what was sitting around all winter and staring down the possibility of being a Toronto Blue Jay, maybe not coming back to the Mets, and coming into this season with a purpose. Now, financial motivation always. I mean, there's that old, walkier myth or theory or whatever it may be. But this is a different Pete Alonso, one that, even though they compare him to, his rookie year or maybe even 2022 when he drove in 130 runs, this is a guy that is finally looking like the player that could take pitches, maybe go the other way a little bit. You saw that today. Something that I've said, if he wants to be the next level, he wants to be Paul Goldschmidt. Rather than be Paul Konerko or Richie Sexson or one of those guys, which is not a knock, he's a little power hitter. He's going to have to do those things, and he's doing them now. How sustainable it is at the age of, nearly 30, or he's actually 30, I don't know, because usually hitters don't all of a sudden click like that. But it's an interesting start to the season, and he's got only one more strikeout than walk, and he's got an on base over 400. That's typically not Pete Alonso. He's usually the guy who hits home runs and maybe gets some doubles. But now he's getting more, as many doubles and more doubles than home runs, more complete hitters. So interesting. What are your thoughts watching him every day?
Yeah, this just feels different, right? Like we haven't
Yep.
seen, I know he's performed, he's put together 50 plus home run seasons, but the way he's doing it, obviously he's talked a lot in the past about cutting down on chase and whiff, and he's doing that. He's wearing out pitchers, he's seeing a ton of pitches and then making it count, collecting base hits in clutch moments. I don't know if Juan Soto is maybe helping him, maybe drawing some walks while he's in the on deck circle, kind of getting a chance to see what these pitchers are made of. But something that was interesting, like today, when he talked about, that game tying hit, just how analytical he was, kind of knowing what Romano was doing, kind of working down the strike zone. He had an approach, he stuck with it. And made it count. So, I think all these years trying to cut down on whiff and chase, this is we're kind of really seeing him dialed in with that. And then I spoke with him in Minnesota. He's talking about just feeling really good about where his mechanics are, staying behind the ball, and you see it. These results are incredible. 26 RBIs here, and we're not even through the month of April. It's just insane. So it's been a lot of fun
Absolutely.
to watch, him kind of take everything that he's been trying to do, and it's all working for him right now.
And I mean, he's been carrying the offense, and Lindor joined the party. And let's face it, if there's one part of the team that concerns you, and maybe this is, symptomatic of Soto being more of a on-base walk machine than an RBI or home run guy, is that the offense hasn't really come around better the last few days, better. Not there, facing a lot of tough pitching. I don't think people realize if you go series by series, they've seen some really good pitching, even though they haven't played top-notch teams. Now, there might be some bad luck. I look at their line drive percentage, and I know some of the guys like Vientos are trying to become more patient. I know that in a lot of ways, the Mets, from what I understand, Jeremy Barnes is preaching an old-school money ball, like 04 Red Sox, taking pitches, basic stuff instead of launch angle and everything like that. But you do have McNeil and Alvarez on the horizon, maybe as early as Friday. That's going to lengthen the lineup. And you have to think that Soto and Nimmo will be better, even though Pete Alonso and Lindor might come down to earth a little bit. What about the offense? Are you if you have some concerns about it, particularly with Vientos and Nimmo in that middle really off to a slow start? Or do you see a good process, a lot of BA, BIP, bad luck, a lot of line drives right at people? Where are you falling into that? Because it's a little schizophrenic, their offensive numbers when you start to really dive into some of the secondary analytical numbers?
I think you look at Vientos, he seemed to hit the ball hard. And I think he has run into a little bit of bad luck, and you've seen him kind of break out of that a little bit. And one thing this, in the last two series, he's taken the ball the other way, which is something that you like to see from him. Nimmo, on the other hand, I wouldn't say concerned because he's broken out of kind of slumps like this in the past, but you'd really like to see him get on base more. I think his on base is well below 300 at this point. So, batting in that cleanup spot, which is where he's kind of sat, behind Pete. I think you'd like to see a little bit more from him. And then touch and go down the lineup. Marte had the big hit today. We've seen a little bit more from Winker of late. So yeah, I mean, with the lineup being the way it is, I think you can count on different guys to kind of rise to the occasion each and every day. It seems like someone else is providing a spark. Luis Angel Acuña has kind of come into his own a little bit here over the last few weeks, and then you can kind of count on that top to carry you there. So, Nimmo maybe a little bit of concern. That's maybe the one that kind of stands out here, through a few weeks here in the season.
So safe to say, Beatty and Senga get sent down when Alvarez and McNeil get brought up. I know there was some thought, would Alvarez be better as a DH? That would require you maybe dumping a Marte or an Azokar. I think they need that backup depth, especially with Azokar in the outfield. So I guess that's the easy money. And it's a shame because Brett Beatty hits a home run. It just this the timing for Beatty's just not there. Senga, it's a numbers game. But I guess that's where it goes. And to your point, Luis Angel Acuña, who I've been skeptical of, at the very least shows that I think he could add a dimension, even as like a 300 at bat guy or someone that can, potentially just, go up against lefties or something like that.
Yeah, it really is an interesting decision. Whether because they've talked all spring training long, before the injury to McNeil. Is there going to be enough at bats if Acuña is, at the major league level? I think he's proven that, he can make the most of those opportunities, but still, is there enough? Is McNeil, do you count on him to be that everyday second baseman? And now with the Siri injury, McNeil maybe sees a little bit more time in the outfield. It'll be interesting to see. I think maybe, I don't know about Azokar. Do they go that direction and hold on to both of them with the idea that maybe McNeil is getting more outfield reps and you can use Acuña in the outfield? But like you said, I think maybe Beatty could be the odd man out. Maybe they decide to try and get squeeze Azokar through waivers. But it'll be interesting to see. It's I'm curious to see the direction they go here with the backup infield and backup center field behind Tyrone Taylor here.
Talk a little bit about being around Juan Soto. I know that there's been all this talk radio, hot air, Soto's body language, assessing it. Oh, he wasn't happy about the Lindor walk-off. To me, I think he's just slightly off. He's a little bit early on some pitches. I mean, he missed the three-run home run because he's early. He was early in Minnesota too. Some bad luck there. He still almost has the same amount of win shares as Lindor, and he's hitting 230. I mean, I know the walks play into that. Talk about, almost a month in being around Soto, Soto now with the big contract. Any insights that you could share with us?
I think it's just a guy that's kind of trying to get his bearings a little bit. Obviously with the circus that was this offseason, how much money, that contract, record contract in all of sports. He's still a young guy. He's 26. So, he's been kind of, bouncing back and forth through different cities here the last, 3 or 4 seasons. Just trying to get settled in. And, obviously there's a lot of pressure on him to produce. But he's still taking his walks. He's hit a lot of balls hard, a lot of hard line drives that haven't really broke his way. I think it's just a matter of a slow start, settling in, and I don't think we should be all that concerned with him. Through the clubhouse, he seems, you still see a smile on his face. I think he's just growing comfortable here, getting used to his new surroundings, and I expect to see him produce here in the near future.
Now, I'm perplexed about Diaz. So he's got this whatever, this hip cramp or whatever. Rod Thompson, I don't know if you heard post game, thought he was playing a game to avoid a balk. I don't know if you heard that whole story. You know, he talked about that. I looked at the replay. I'm not so sure. I am concerned about Diaz, and I think the Mets can navigate Diaz not being who you want him to be better than any other time in the last 6 years since he's been the closer. His velocity is down. His command is spotty. I think he got a little. It's been better the last few outings, but it seems like he could throw his slider for strikes, particularly against lefties, a lot more consistently than his fastball. And when that fastball starts to dip to 94.5, 95, 96 miles an hour, it's far more average. He's a two-pitch pitcher. He's gotten the job done. Mendoza shows faith in him. I read something about maybe that his legs were like one was longer than the other. And I mean, all this chiropractic stuff. And I'm like, okay, now we're really getting into the weeds here. Is it just that the miles caught up with him? I mean, every closer goes, other than Mariano, goes through it. I am actually concerned about Diaz because I think that he's very hittable. And, you know, it doesn't look the same. Is he hurt? Is he, you know, there's so many reasons. What are your thoughts? You're up there close, or are we making more of this? And you know, he's getting the job done. Let's just leave him alone.
No, I think it's reasonable. Like you mentioned, the velocity isn't what it was, you know, pre-knee injury when he was, you know, dialing up 101, 102. And when you're a two-pitch guy, with a fastball and a slider, you know, obviously that slider is pretty diabolical, but if you're throwing 95, 96, I think you're not going to be as untouchable as you were, you know, a few years ago, when you're at your peak. So, like you mentioned, I think, you know, I don't know about concern because he's getting results. He's managed to kind of work through some traffic, and at times, you know, he does look unhittable. So, we'll see kind of moving forward. This hip thing is kind of interesting. Like you mentioned, he did say his right foot was a little bit longer than his left foot. And he goes into the training room, and now all of a sudden he's got
They stretched them out
the
like Gumby.
cramp. I mean, I wrote that story.
I'm
I'm like,
dating
how do I even
myself.
approach this?
I'm dating myself. It's like Gumby at this point, so.
Exactly. But like you mentioned, I do think they have, you know, a number of guys they can kind of turn to get some saves, whether it's Stanek, you know, Minter from the left side. You know, I think he's still 6 of 6 on save chances, you know, despite all the runs he's given up. I think they're maybe a little bit better equipped to handle something. I just don't think, like you mentioned, that he's the elite closer he was back in
Right.
2022. I don't know if anyone will maybe get to that level, you know, just how many strikeouts he was able to do, throw against, you know, to the number of batters faced. So, you know, it's a tough position, but you know, we'll kind of see how it shakes out here as he logs more innings over the next few months.
Look, they're going to go into slumps. They're not going to play 720 baseball all year, but enjoy it as much as long as it lasts, and creating an early cushion is important. National League is shaping up, and it's very early. I know it's not May 1st, but shaping up to be very interesting. The West looks very tough outside of Colorado. You know, you might be in a position that the team that doesn't win the NL East and doesn't win the NL Central is in this NL West 1-2-3, you know, 600 baseball level competition. That's a very tough wild card competition to stay competitive in. You know, 580, 590 baseball, wild card. Usually wild card, you can mess around at 500 till about July 15th, maybe even the deadline. You might not be able to do that. So you saw the Phillies. You see the Mets. You know, we haven't seen the West teams yet, but any early thoughts on the National League, how it's shaping up? But also, what were your thoughts about the Phillies? This team, again, it's early, but almost like the Mets took their mojo away. Again, an Austin Powers reference here. I'm really dating myself, Andrew. You know, took their mojo away by beating them in 4 games last October.
Yeah, I think you look at, you know, obviously last year it was 89 wins and it wasn't enough for the Diamondbacks to get into the playoffs. And I think you're looking at another case where you're going to have to, you know, score in the upper 80s of wins because of just how strong
Sure.
the NL is overall. I think you look at, you know, obviously the Dodgers are the top team, but the Padres are really strong. Tatis is out to another kind of MVP caliber
Sure.
star, and Michael King has been, you know, unbelievable for them here to start the season. Nick Pivetta, former Red Sox, I think they've kind of shored up that pitching staff there. And then, the Diamondbacks and Giants, those two teams, I'm kind of curious to see, if they can kind of sustain this level of play. Jung-Hoo Lee for the Giants, I've enjoyed watching him a little bit. He's been unbelievable coming off that injury from last season. So you look at those teams, the Cubs with Kyle Tucker, they've gone off to a really good start. So it's going to be tough, and I don't think you can ever count out the Braves. I know they're not playing up to their caliber, and some things going on with Ronald Acuña and bashing Kalinic and whatnot, but I don't think you can count them out, just because
No.
they seem to be in it every year. So the NL is a bear at this point, and it's going to take a lot. So it's nice that the Mets got off to the start they have, because you're going to see some of those teams coming up. I know the Diamondbacks are
Right.
coming up, so we'll kind of see kind of how they stack up. I know they'll see the Cubs, in a few weeks, so
Yep.
it'll be interesting to see how they stack up against some of those other top teams coming off a an emotional series win here against the Phillies.
And Washington, Miami, even though they're not great, they're not
They're
pushover teams.
no pushovers.
Pittsburgh's got good pitching. Cincinnati's a 500 club.
Reds,
Maybe
yep.
Milwaukee. It's gonna be it's clear. And look, maybe the Orioles turn it around. Maybe Tampa Bay turns it around. But the American League just doesn't have the length of teams that the National League does.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it might be a good thing for the Mets or for any National League club to go through this fire, so to speak, maybe better positioned in the postseason. What do you have up? So you've been generous with your time. I appreciate you coming on here this late Wednesday night. Long day at the ballpark. Finally have a day off. Enjoy it. Headed to Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. What do you got coming up at the Record Sports Mets coverage, and obviously at X or other social media outlets that you're on?
Yeah, so I got a story coming up either tomorrow or Friday. I spoke with Tyrone Taylor. He's a really nice guy, really cool guy. I'm talking about him taking the lion's share of kind of center field reps and kind of what that looks like for him. Obviously, he had the great play,
Yep.
last night. So, yeah, I mean, fun guy to talk to. Talked with Antoine against about kind of how he envisions the center field position. Who maybe some of the guys could be, whether it's McNeil, Acuña, Nimmo, who will we kind of see filtering in there behind Tyrone Taylor. So that's a story I got coming up, and I'll be in DC all weekend, looking forward to an exciting series, four games in DC. See if the Mets can kind of take this win streak and keep building on it. So yeah.
It's a hell of a lot more fun. It's boring covering a winning team sometimes. There's no juicy stories, but it's a hell of a lot more fun. Listen, go get some rest. Enjoy your time off. And thanks again for doing this tonight, my friend. All
All
righty.
right. Thanks,
All
Mike.
right.
Appreciate
Be
it.
well. Andrew Tredinnick joining me. Great stuff here. Special edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Want to thank everybody for tuning in to this midweek edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter. Would love for you to subscribe. Less than a cup of coffee a month. Substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast on Sunday. Till then, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets. Head for the